Welcome to the ISPNIC Hot Topics Podcast, brought to you by ISPNIC. Each episode will host a short interview with key opinion leaders in PICU or NICU and other fields of medicine. Keep listening to find out more about this episode's host, guest, and featured hot topic.
So hello, my name is Daniele De Luca. I'm the ISPNIC Medical President, and I will be your host for this episode. And during today's podcast, I will be speaking with Christopher Newt, Professor Newt from University of California, Southern California, Los Angeles. I guess needs no presentation. Thank you, Christopher, or Keith, if I can say so, to be here with us.
Thank you. It's very nice to be with you today.
So it's a real pleasure for me because you're a legend for us. I mean, one of the most important key opinion leaders in pediatric respiratory critical care. Much can be said, but I really wanted to hear something from you today. I remember the first time I read a paper authored by Christopher Newt, I was maybe not even a resident, and I learned a little bit about bronchiolitis. And then I remember I learned about the pediatric modified MARA score for the acute lung injury, and then the transition between obstructive and restrictive disorders, and so on. And this obviously marked a little bit of early steps of my career, like many others. So tell me, Kit, what do you think actually changed most significantly in all these years? And what is the most important thing that you have accomplished? There are many, I think.
Yes, that's a tall order to ask me to make a choice. But I think one of the most important things we've been able to achieve is the ability to do collaborative research. I remember that 30 or 40 years ago, it was actually quite difficult for differing hospitals and units to do multi-center studies. Hospitals seem to be very nervous about it, at least in the United States. And I think many of those barriers have been broken down now, and it seems that we can do much more collaborative research, as shown at least in the US by networks like Palisi and by Capcorn.
Yeah, we actually are trying to invest as much as possible in that as well. You know that in Europe, it's a little bit always complicated because Europeans, they fight about everything. They fight about soccer, about football, about refugees, about politics. And obviously, they fight also over research protocols. But I guess it's something normal. But I have the same feeling that at least things are going better. And there is also strong collaboration with SCCM, ESPNIC, and more recently, even the ESIC counterpart here in Europe. What do you think about this?
Yes, I think there certainly is more collaboration now, and I welcome it. There are certainly barriers to doing it, particularly in confidentiality issues and cross-border issues, but it seems to be getting better as we go by.
Yeah, you're right. Despite GDPR and all these strange regulations that are imposing a significant burden of work for us during research, if I ask you, what would you consider the most important thing you have done or discovered or accomplished during all your wonderful career? What would you tell me?
That's an awkward question. I don't know that I've done anything that particularly great, but it has been a wonderful career. I must say, in my for me, it's a great vocation. I think I got very lucky in being able to come from New Zealand to Canada, to the Hospital for Sick Children, where I did my residency and some faculty work, and then down to the States to San Francisco, and then finally to Los Angeles. I think the very strong grounding I got in pediatrics and also in respiratory medicine up in Toronto has stood me in good stead over the years and has allowed me to develop various lung function testing and children and infants who can't otherwise cooperate, and through that an understanding of the mechanics of their disease. And that has led us forward to understanding various disease entities and then on to decision support tools for mechanical ventilation. And hopefully at some point, closed loop mechanical ventilation.
Yeah, well, those are, let's say, example of the very strong technological improvement we had in our fields. I guess that in the beginning, it was a little bit like that, but not as much as now. And critical care seems more and more highly technologically dependent. Sometimes, you know, a place in the PQ looks like sort of a space lab with a lot of machines, a lot of screens and colored stuff. Surely we are seeing something right now that we couldn't even imagine. You know, you mentioned a closed loop, oxygen control, neural ventilation. Sometimes we may even think if all these things are really for the good or they're just fashion items. Well, I don't think so, but I'm sure that there are people that thinking that some of these tools are a little bit something to play with, but not really advancement. What do you think about?
Oh, I think that's true. But, you know, that's how we get ahead, isn't it? We play with things, whether we regard them as tools or toys, some we love and some we discard. And in that way, ultimately, medicine, as other parts of our life improve. I do fear that we have moved, perhaps I'm talking more personally now, but I think we're moving a little bit more away from the bedside, that being perhaps a little too reliant on technology and not enough on good clinical examination. I think our ability to do invasive, not tests, but to do invasive procedures is going down because of the decreasing number of procedures because of the technical improvements. I mean, we have oximetry, so we don't need so many arterial lines. So we have end-tidal CO2 and don't need so many lines. And keeping people trained for those procedures when they really do need them, I think is quite a challenge going forward.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And that's a general problem. It's also connected with a different vision. You know, people only worrying about statistics, about the right randomization, and forgetting physiology, forgetting pathophysiology, forgetting the mechanisms behind that particular disease for that particular kid. And I guess this is something must be absolutely highlighted. We will never do that enough, I guess. And so you basically feel the same. You have the same perception over there across the ocean. Is that correct?
Yes, indeed. Well, I think the lessons that I learned in Toronto many years ago when we were starting monitoring, they were building their own monitors at that stage, but the bedside people said, keep looking at the patient, look at the patient, don't look at the numbers all the time. And I think that's just as true today as it was then. I mean, technology has given us some great advances, though, and some of the non-invasive ventilation is good. I don't think we know its place yet properly, maybe never will. But we also need to concentrate on the interfaces, how to deliver the support to the patient with proper interfaces. And there we do run into some conservatism, if you like, on the part of federal agencies like the FDA. They're very risk-averse and they make life very difficult in that respect.
You bet. I mean, this is something that we have just discussed it a few days ago, even for the NICU, where there are more patients, but still this sort of a precautionary in an excessive way is something that you can feel everywhere. And it looks like it's more directed to protect the patient from the risk of experimentation or innovation, but not protecting it, forgetting to protect him from the lack of innovation. Because exactly. There is also this.
And never consider the downside.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's a balance and there are two sides. Well, speaking about that, here in Espnik, we have been so, brave to launch a new journal. So Intensive Care Medicine, Pediatric and Neonatal, finally. You guys, PCM, and we didn't have it. So we felt the need to have something similar here in Europe. There's no competition. We will continue to be close friends, but tell me your opinion about that. It's just been launched.
Well, I'm delighted. I know it's just been launched. I have some connection with it through my connections with ESNIC, but I'm on one of the review panels, which I'm delighted about. I congratulate you for getting this going. As I mentioned earlier, I think I told Sergio Fanconi back in the mid-90s when he was president that this was something that needed to happen. So I think it's good to have another journal and it's good for competition, keeps people on their toes.
Well, you know, we rely on you because for a journal, it's very much important to have the key opinion leaders as advisors and reviewers, obviously, in order to grow up. The estimations tell us that more or less we're going to have a very good impact factor in 3/4 years. But I guess there is enough room because so far there was only PCCM and and that there is enough room for two journals for the specialty all over the world. So I hope you will be able to collaborate strongly with the ICMPN guys. And now, going towards the end of the podcast, tell me something about your hobby that I know. I mean, like going very, very up, like on the Kilimanjaro. I remember a picture from you while going there. I guess this wasn't for checking hemoglobin saturation or some high altitude physiology or something like that. But I really want to know from your side how it looks like to go over there.
Well, it was a wonderful trip. There were, in fact, three physicians on that trip and a couple of nurses. So, of course, people had to take portable pulse oximeters. And Jörg Hammer from Basel was with us, and my daughter, also a physician down in Melbourne, Australia, California born and bred, of course, but she works down there. They all brought pulse oximeters, and we tested ourselves occasionally. Not sure how accurate the things were, but I gave up worrying about low oxygens on some of our patients when I saw how low ours got going up Kilimanjaro. But it's a wonderful trip. But the afterwards, going through the Ngorongoro National Park there is absolutely fabulous. So I recommend it to anybody.
Yeah, I remember this beautiful picture. So maybe it's going to be my future destination. Okay, so thank you very much for your time, Kit. Hope to see you very soon over there in California. And I'm sure that all the ethnic members have enjoyed this small conversation with such a legend like you. And thank you again for being here.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me, Daniele. It's lovely to see you and to have this opportunity to chat. And my best wishes to all the ESPIC members and for the launch of the new journal, which I know is a very personal thing for you.
Thank you very much again. Bye-bye.